When I was little, I always read about nonfiction, like history. I'm big into history. I'd read about battles and stuff. And so naturally, the Old Testament, to me, I would just sit there and just read it. May think, oh, a little weirdo, it's a little seventh graders reading Judges or Joshua. But that always fascinated me, and especially the stories of the kings. Because I like to read the Second Kings and then Second Chronicles, First Kings, and First Chronicles, and how you can find the differences and new information in each one. So I've always liked it. So I kind of want to share a story with y'all tonight. You know, and I'm sure you may know a little bit about this guy, but I feel like a lot of times he's overlooked. He's a pretty good story. It's the story of Manasseh. This is a guy that you know, he's one of the kings of Judah, and we just don't really know. I feel like we don't know a lot about him. Maybe in Bible class when you were little, you remember hitting his name when you had to recite the Leader of the Kings, or you know, maybe you skimmed over and you've seen his name. But you know, I think this a study, just a quick study tonight of his life and the outcome of his life. It's just, I think it's a really good story. I don't want to spoil anything for you, so I'll try not to tell you anything at the end yet. But we're just going to start where most beginnings are, at verse 1 of chapter 21. I'll just read it. Manasseh was 12 years old when he became king, and he reigned 55 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Hephzibah. Okay, so right off the bat, and even if you backtrack a little bit to chapter 20, and in the last couple of verses, it's Hezekiah. And this is a class, so I'm going to ask questions. Not hard, it'll be easy questions. So answer it right, and you get a prize at the end, maybe. Maybe I'll forget, and you won't get a prize. There's no prizes, I just made that up. But, okay, Hezekiah, good or bad king? Good king, yes. He's very good king, okay. He's one of the examples where he was really sick, and he prayed that God would heal him, and God extended his life. He did a lot of cool things. He dug a well. They were being besieged by an army, and he dug a well through a tunnel so that water could come into the city during the siege. So he had all these interesting things, and he was it said he did right in the sight of God. So Hezekiah passes away, and his son Manasseh, who was 12 years old. Okay, I know, you know, most of the people here have children. You know, a 12-year-old, I taught a youth devotional class at Elkmont, and there was a lot of 12-year-olds in there. And you know, I was just saying, guys, you know, at this point in your life, you'd be king of a nation, a pretty powerful nation at this time, because Hezekiah had won victories and had been a successful ruler. And you can just imagine that, having a, you know, we're upset sometimes with the leaders we elect, what about having a 12-year-old kid as your king that you can't do anything about or else they'll kill you. It's pretty shocking. I know I couldn't rule a nation, and I'm quite a bit older than him now. I couldn't imagine myself being 12. And the thing that catches my eye, too, is he reigned 55 years. You know, David, Saul, and Solomon all reigned 40 years. You know, this guy reigned, he was the longest reigning king at 55 years. That's a long time. And some of that's attributed to him starting young. But still, at that time, that's a long time to reign. 55 years as king is a very long time. And as we said, he's the son of Hezekiah, who was a great king. But he was a grandson of Ahaz. Not Ahab, but Ahaz. Ahaz, good or bad? Ahaz, good or bad? One or the other. 50-50 chance. He was bad. He was not good. Sounds like Ahab. Ahaz just doesn't sound like a friendly guy. You know, if you have a neighbor named Ahaz, there's no way he's going to be a nice guy. His name's Ahaz. That's just not a very nice sounding name. So he was bad, but he had a good son. And so if you're going by eeny, meeny, miny, moe here, we had bad king, son, good king, and now other son, bad king. I don't know. That's not like a running pattern here. But you think that having such a great father as Hezekiah, this guy would have some kind of foundation. At least he would start out good. And we're going to see that immediately in verse 2, he did evil in the sight of the Lord according to the abominations of the nations the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. So we know right off the bat, this guy is not very good. He did evil in the sight of the Lord. And, you know, that's not something when, you know, someone wrote about you in the future, if they're writing about you, they're going to write your name, comma, they did evil in the sight of the Lord. And that's not something, you know, that you really want to be associated with. And that's right now, if you just read those two verses, that's all we know about this guy. And that's not a lot of good stuff. Let's keep reading. In verse 3, he rebuilt the high places which Hezekiah, his father, had destroyed. He raised up altars for Baal and made a wooden image, as Ahab, king of Israel, had done, as he worshipped all the hosts of heaven, and he served them. So he set up idol worship. He set up Baal. You know, we hear a ton about Baal. There's even people named after Baal, Jezebel, you know, her father, Ethbaal. They're named after this god. This was a god, you know, the god of many things, but one of them was thunder, and you see, or thunder and lightning. You see this guy holding like a lightning bolt, like we think of Zeus in the movie Hercules. You know, he's up there with this lightning bolt, and he can shoot them down. So anytime there'd be thunder or storms or something, they think Baal would either be mad at him or he'd be trying to, you know, send him a message. So this was a pretty prominent god. And it says, a point here is that his father had actually destroyed him. So I don't know if he had seen his father do this necessarily. He could have been, he might not have been born, might have been small. But surely, you know, he had some kind of positive influence here. His father had torn down these idols, but he is rebuilding them. And then it goes down to say, made a wooden image as Ahab. And we already brought up Ahab. You know, you hear Ahab, you instantly think probably the worst king that Israel / Judah had. So to be associated with this guy is not a very good thing. A point, too, to make in the back end of verse 3, they worshiped all the host of heaven, and he served them. What do you think the host of heaven there means? Yeah, the sun, the moon, stars. At this time, it was a very prominent thing. Whether it's lunar worship or solar worship, you know, if you think about, like, stories about the Aztecs and stuff that worship the sun god. And then you look at Egyptian culture. I think Ra was the sun god. In all these cultures, there usually was a sun god because they saw it come up. It rose up in the day, and it gave them light. You know, and when it was sunny, it was warm. It felt good. So they attributed all these positive things with the sun. And then the moon shed light, and it was like this big being in the sky. You know, that was something that they worshipped. So he was not only doing idol worship and stuff, he was worshipping stars. He would have worshipped like the brighter the North Star, or seeing Venus, the being bright. They would have more prominent stars and patterns. They would have worshipped those as well. So it's not just one thing. You know, he's worshipping quite a lot. So this guy is not starting out very well. And it gets worse. And in verse 4, he also built altars in the house of the Lord, which the Lord had said, in Jerusalem I will put my name. And he built altars for all the hosts of heaven in the two courts of the Lord, in the house of the Lord. So, you know, not only is he building these things, he's putting them in the temple, in the house of the Lord. If you think about that, and like today, it'd be like somebody coming in here and standing here and just preaching about total false doctrine, or, you know, some kind of type of idol worship or some far-off thing, but coming in the middle of the temple and in the courts of the temple, setting up altars to the host of heaven, like we talked about, the sun and the moon and the stars. I mean, this guy wasn't just doing like one thing wrong. It seems that he just got thing after thing after thing. And it's not minor things. These are big deals. We're not supposed to have any other god before God. And then this guy has, you know, countless gods here. All the hosts of heaven as well as Baal. And it goes on and on here. And it can get worse. And in verse 6, it says, also, he made his sons pass through the fire. Let's stop right there. I mean, that... You read about this a couple different times. In Leviticus, they talk about it. If you want to turn with me to Leviticus 18, I think it's verse 21. Let me check it, double check. Yeah, and it says, and you shall not let any of your descendants pass through the fire to Molech, nor shall you profane the name of the Lord, I am the, or name of your God, I am the Lord. So we have a direct commandment to not do this, and they're sacrificing, a lot of times it would be their firstborn child, to Molech. At that time, it was another god, like Baal. And one of the ways that Molech was worshipped was a big cow, like a big bronze or iron cow that had hands, like oxen head, and it had human hands. And they would lay that child, actually, in the hands, and they would heat the idol from inside of the idol. so that it would just be scalding hot. And, you know, if you laying a little kid on, you know, hands out like this, it was massive. It was, you know, it wasn't like a person size. It was like a building size structure. It's pretty gruesome to think about. You know, and you read about this a couple different times in the Old Testament, and you have to think about, like, the zeal that these people had for these false gods to do this kind of stuff. You know, we read today, you go to these televangelists, and you hear about people donating, you know, millions of dollars. And I just read about, and where I visited church Sunday in Double Springs, the preacher brought up a lesson, and in it, there's this guy today who's, he was looking for a $63 million jet to go across the world. He's a preacher, one of the televangelists. And, you know, there's no doubt that he got that money. And the zeal that these people have, wrong zeal, you know, obviously, that goes without saying. But, you know, if he could just somehow, if we could find a way to direct that zeal towards the right way, think of all the difference that these people could be making. I mean, these people were willing to give their firstborn and burn them alive for these gods. You think about, you know, Abraham going on the mountain to sacrifice Isaac. That's the same kind of deal here, except this is far more gruesome. And it happens, this is not just the only time it happens. You know, it happens quite a bit in the Old Testament. And God specifically says, you know, do not do this. But you see Manasseh here doing it amongst a lot of other things too. Let's go to verse 7. It says, he even set a carved image of Asherah that he had made in the house of the Lord, which the Lord had said to David and Solomon, his son, in this house and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, I will put my name forever. And I will not make the feet of Israel wonder any more from the land which I gave their fathers, only to all that I have commanded them, and according to all the law my servant Moses commanded to them. Okay, so we know he's building these things. And there's another god mentioned here, Asherah. It's like it's a Canaanite goddess, but it was built like a totem pole. And they would just put these pretty much anywhere in like a public place, and they would worship them just like they would any other idol. But he, you know, he's just desecrating the house of the Lord. Excuse me. By putting this just right in the middle of the temple. And it goes on to quote God here saying that, you know, I chose you guys. And Manasseh is just kind of looking that in the face and just saying, you know, I don't care. You know, I'm going to do what I want. And, you know, when a king makes these decisions, the people follow after him. You know, we know there's a remnant at all times. It's mentioned that. But, you know, the majority of these people are also committing these acts. They are also worshiping them. So that shows you also that the influence of these leaders would have had on their people in the wrong kind of way. And, you know, not only is he doing all this, it just seems to get much worse. In verse number 9, it says, they paid no attention, and Manasseh seduced them to do more evil than the nations whom the Lord had destroyed before the children of Israel. So now they're even worse off than the nations that they were told to be totally separate from. That, you know, you remember reading about in the Old Testament all the time, people, they had a ton of battles. That's what he's talking about. You know, God was on the side of the Israelites when they were on his side. And they would oftentimes just totally wipe out and decimate these countries and these leaders and their nations. But they've actually are worse than them now. And things get bad, but, you know, we think America is definitely, you know, slipping down in the wrong path generally. But, you know, I don't think at this time we can compare to what the state of Judah was at this time. It was even worse. Okay, let's look at verse 11. It says, because Manasseh, king of Judah, had done these abominations, he had acted more wickedly than all the Amorites who were before him, and also made Judah sin with his idols. Therefore, thus says the Lord God of Israel, behold, I am bringing such calamity upon Jerusalem and Judah that whoever hears of it, both his ears will tingle. And I will stretch over Jerusalem the measuring line of Samaria and the plummet of the house of Ahab. I will wipe Jerusalem as one wipes a dish, wiping it, turning it upside down. So I will forsake the remnant of my inheritance, deliver them into the hand of their enemies, and they shall become victims of plunder to all their enemies because they have done evil in my sight and have provoked me to anger. since the day their fathers came out of Egypt, even to this day. There's a lot of that kind of language, especially in the prophets in the Old Testament. You read about the talk of destruction and desolation of entire nations. And you know, that's what God's talking about, but he's actually talking about his own people here. And in verse 11, something that strikes me when you read it, it's like, because Manasseh, king of Judah. So he's laying this at his feet. You know, he's telling him, hey man, you know, this is because of you. This is your fault. You're the one who set this stuff in motion. And, you know, if he even cared at this point, hearing that should send shockwaves through you. That God is telling you he's going to destroy your nation. Not only that, it's your fault. It's because of you. It's what you've done. And, you know, that's pretty chilling. And let's go to verse 16. It says, moreover, Manasseh shed very much innocent blood, till he had filled Jerusalem from one end to the other, besides his sin, by which he made you to sin, and doing evil in the sight of the Lord. So, right here, it's pretty much it's murder. So, you know, there's all these things that we could just list and list and list of all these bad things. We can add murder to it. Very much innocent blood. So, this guy, you know, if we were to end it there and, you know, not be able to read any more about this guy, I think we can all agree that he was probably one of the worst people you would read about. And, you know, it's not a lot of material here. It's a couple of verses, about 18 verses. But, you know, what we've read and seen is this guy, he's just not a good guy. Even though he had a good father, who we have to question his influence on his own children. You know, Hezekiah being such a good man and knowing God and having a relationship with God, you know, he was a busy man too. He was the king of a country. You know, you got to think maybe that got in the way of him and his little boy's relationship some. And, you know, he passed away and Manasseh was still a young man, but it just seems that he had no real influence at this point, at least, in his life and dealings with God. I mean, he was kind of left alone and, you know, age 12. And all he did, all we read about so far is just diving further and further into wickedness, into darkness. And if you're done with 2 Kings and this is all you read, and in verse 18 we learned that, you know, he rested with his fathers and he died. I mean, that's pretty much it. And you're just, you know, you're kind of left there. And, you know, if you're reading through 2 Kings, you just see that and you just keep flipping the page because it seems like the same old stories with these kings. You know, it's the same old stories of they come to power and they just do evil. And then every once in a while, you know, you get a good king in there that does right. But it's so hard to erase all the evils that the other king had done. So he's in the positive, and by the time he gets in the positive a little bit, another king comes, and it's more negative. It's hard to stay in the green with these kings. But it's not all the writing that we have on him. And, you know, I'm very thankful for that. Turn to 2 Chronicles 33. Excuse me. Okay, 2 Chronicles 33. We'll start in verse 10. And the Lord said and spoke to Manasseh and to the people, but they would not listen. So we have one more tribe of God trying to speak to his people. But they wouldn't listen. They just wouldn't listen to him. Okay, so we go in verse 11. Therefore the Lord brought upon them the captains of the armies of the king of Assyria, who took Manasseh with hooks and bound him with bronze fetters and carried him off to Babylon. Okay, and if you read a lot about this nation of Assyria, this difference, there's Syria and then there's Assyria. And you read about Jonah going to Nineveh. Nineveh was the capital of Assyria. So this is a city in Nineveh and a country of Assyria that we know a lot about because a lot of it is in the Bible and in secular history too. They were very warlike people. They liked to conquer nations. They were a powerful nation at this time. It says, if you want to get pretty gruesome here, and they were known to do this, they said they led them away with hooks. And what they would do is like hook them in the nose and like lead them on like cattle or, you know, like reeling in a fish. Because if someone's got, just imagine being hooked, by, like nose with a big hook in your nose, you got to go wherever you're being pulled. You just like, you know, a cattle, like a anytime leading a horse somewhere, you know, by the girdle, you're by the bit, and just they can't go anywhere but the way you want them to go. It was very humiliating, and they did this, you know, to humiliate and as an intimidation tactic. And we have big stone carvings of like an Assyrian victory that are still today. And I think Jimmy, when he went to, I don't know if it was in Paris or London, one of the museums, he had a picture of it carved of an Assyrian victory, and they're carrying these people on. And that you can see the picture of them carrying with a rope and the big hook in their nose or in another part of their body. And it's pretty gruesome. But this, put it on a personal level, this happened to Manasseh. I mean, it says right there he was led away and with fetters, which are just like a shackle. Excuse me, I got a cough real quick. Having a rough time. So, you know, this was a scary group of people. This wasn't anybody to be trifled with, and Manasseh was in their custody, as was the nation of Israel. In verse 12, it says, when he was in affliction, he implored the Lord his God, and he humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers. You know, you read this, and, you know, think about, you know, about time is what I thought when I read it. You know, you had all these influences, and it took him to this point now to, in his affliction, he implored the Lord his God. It took him to be in a prison probably somewhere, have been led away into captivity at a very low point. I mean, he was a leader. All he knew since he was 12 was living in a palace and having control of a country. And we don't know how old he is here, but you can imagine that. I mean, that's what you've known. You've been raised in a palace, and now you're in a dungeon somewhere, somebody's prisoner. And all this, all these things, these different things caused him to implore to the Lord his God. And in verse 13, he prayed to him, and he received his entreaty, heard his supplication, and brought him back to Jerusalem into his kingdom. And I'm going to stop right there, because I know there's a little bit left there. We'll go to that in a second. But, you know, this is another testament to God's mercy and his ability to forgive and his, you know, long-suffering and patience with Manasseh and, you know, with us today. Look at all the things that he had done between the murder and the false gods and just everything, setting up the temple, idol worship in the temple. This was something, it was in God's house, and God is still able right here. He heard him. He listens. He listens to us. That should give us today a ton of confidence that, you know, if he listens to this guy who done all these terrible things, he's gonna listen to us today. I don't think any of us have led a nation astray by using idol worship. And I know sin is sin, but a lot of times we feel we might get really down on ourselves. You know, God's not going to listen to me. You know, I'm a sinner. He's not going to pay attention to me. The truth is we all are. We all could say that, but we have a God that will listen to us. And this is one of many examples in the Bible. I think God did that on purpose. He shows us the flaws of these people. They're just like me and you, and God's able to hear them, and to not just hear them, but to do something about it. He said he received him, he heard his supplication, and he brought him back to Jerusalem. And this was an instant. There was a passage of time there. But just, you know, not only did he hear him, he restored him back on the throne. And, you know, that's pretty amazing, too. You know, you take it where he was in a prison, and now he's able to be back on the throne, that God restored him. I think that's pretty awesome. And it's hard for me to forgive. Like when I was growing up with Hayden, you know, and maybe he throws something at me or something, I'll be mad at him for like a week over it. It was hard to forgive him. And I think we're over that now a little bit. But, you know, if something like that is that hard for me to forgive, how much more this and these acts that he committed against God, that God was still able to forgive him over. I think that's just one of the many good lessons we can take from his story. In the end of verse 13, then Manasseh knew that the Lord was God. And I want to ask him, just, you know, how did you not know that before this? How did you not know that the Lord was God when your father Hezekiah was given extra life, that he was saved from enemy's armies, that he sent an angel to kill 180,000 of the enemy soldiers at one time. Were you not told these stories? Did that not help you? And then I think about today, we have the entire Bible, and there's some people that still do not know that the Lord is God. And, you know, that puts pressure on us to tell people and to spread the word. And, you know, I just want to ask him, you know, what took you? What happened? Did the light turn on? And thankfully, the light did turn on. And this is actually the same language that Nebuchadnezzar, after he spent the story about him, he was out on his balcony one day, and he's like, wow, look at all that I have done. And then God struck him and turned him into something that we would call like a Bigfoot or like a werewolf. And it said he ran around and had like sharp talons and long teeth and long hair, like a beast of the field. And then God, after a certain time, God allowed him to become whole again. And it said at that point, Nebuchadnezzar knew that the Lord was God. So that's the same language that we look at there and here. It's the same kind of story. You know, God had given Nebuchadnezzar the biggest empire of the world at that time. And, you know, it's like, how'd you not know that God existed before then? And it took something like that to make him know, to let him know that, you know, that God was God. And it's, like I said earlier, it's easy to look at them and, you know, not consider our world today where we have so many people, you know, living like there is no God. And I think that some of those people, I feel like that if you asked them, they would say there would be a God. But they, you know, they refuse to live like it. Or maybe sometimes we do. I know I've done that in the past where, you know, you take certain things for granted. And we just got to know, got to be calm and know that the Lord is God. And we got to do as he commands us here. And Manasseh in verse 14, you know, I have written here too that, you know, repentance leads to action if it's real repentance. It's a 180. You know, it's not something that you stop for a while and then, you know, hey, you know, later on I stop, but now I'm going to get back into it. It's a full turnaround. You're going in one direction, you totally stop, and you go in the other direction. I remember, and I'm sure you all do too, when you first became Christians, when you first got baptized, and I remember just wanting to do everything. I told Dad, I was like, all right, you know, I'm baptized now. I want to lead prayer. I want to try a song. I want to do all this stuff. And it was like, and you hear this kind of language a lot, but you were like on fire for the Lord. And you look at some of the young people when they have the area wide that was here a couple of weeks ago. You know, a lot of them are on fire for God. And it's great to see that. And, you know, maybe if you became a Christian later on in life and you still have that fire, you know, when you become a Christian, you want to take action. You know you made this choice, and it feels great. And, I mean, I remember the feeling. And you want to try to recapture that feeling. And sometimes it's hard because you can get down on yourself. But, and this is an example, too. Not only did he repent, he burst into action. It says in verse 14, he goes on to build some stuff to strengthen the city. Then in verse 15, it's the real important part. He took away the foreign gods and the idol from the house of the Lord, and all the altars that he had built in the mount of the house of the Lord and in Jerusalem, and he cast them out of the city. You know, he just didn't get out of the prison, and then when he got back, started acting like the same old Manasseh that he used to be. And he made a real change. I think we can say he made a 180, and he totally repented, and he put those old ways behind him. He took away the foreign gods, even the ones that he put in the temple. He took them all away. And in verse 16, he also repaired the altar of the Lord, sacrificed peace offerings and thank offerings on it, and commanded Judah to serve the Lord, God of Israel. So, you know, at this point, he's probably kicking himself. You know, man, I could have had it good this whole time. You know, maybe if I'd have made these choices at the beginning, you know, like God could have been blessing me this whole time. If I'd have been serving him like my father did. And that brings us in verse 17, you know, you see this language a lot too. Nevertheless, the people still sacrifice on the high places, but only to the Lord their God. So there was some ignorance there. And in verses 18 through 20, it just goes on to talk about his death. But he had a son, and his son's name was Ammon. And in verse 21, you read, Ammon was 22 years old when he became king, and he reigned 2 years in Jerusalem. But he did evil in the sight of the Lord, as his father Manasseh had done. He sacrificed all the carved images which his father had done, had made, and served them. And he did not humble himself before the Lord, as his father Manasseh had humbled himself. But Amon trespassed more and more. And, you know, he was 22, okay, so that's 10 years older than Manasseh was. So, you know, you'd like to think he had a little bit more maturity than Manasseh did. Because, you know, you can give Manasseh a little bit of a pass as far as being a young man. But then you throw in that he had such a great God-fearing father, you kind of don't want to feel as bad for him. But, so we know Manasseh, he turned away from the idols. He started worshiping God again. But I think at this point, he had done so much bad in his early years that it was almost too much to make up for. And I think we see that in his son, who was not a good king. Maybe his example had been, you know, so bad up to that point that his son was like, you know, why are you changing? You know, you used to be like this. I'm just going to be like that because, you know, it was more fun then. And we see that he was evil, and he was so bad that in verse 24, his servants conspired against him and killed him in his own house. So that would, I mean, that'd be like a cabinet member trying to take down the president. It was a coup from inside his own regime here. We have people that he trusted killed him from inside his own house, murdered him. So Manasseh, despite, you know, all his evil, he became good. But I think that this is something we have to watch too. You know, I feel like we have to be careful because his actions not only affected himself, but it affected other people too. We can see that in his son pretty clearly, because his son he only reigned 2 years, so that tells you he probably got off to a pretty bad start. And it also says that he did the same things that his father had done before him. But he didn't humble himself, and he trespassed more and more. And, you know, I know Manasseh, I'd like to think that, you know, he continued on with that. That when he did repent, he had made the commitment. We know that he passed away, but there's like probably a gap there that we don't know really a lot about. But I'd like to think that he continued to worship God, and he continued to lead Judah in the right way. But there's something happened there, just like something happened with Ahaz to Hezekiah in a good way. That Hezekiah went against the bad ways of Ahaz. I think that Ammon, I don't know if it was just he was being like a rebellious person, a young kid, as people are known to do, teenagers and young people. But you know, I can't say, neither one of us can, or none of us can at this point. But if you want to keep reading down, people of the land made his son. The last verse of chapter 33, verse 25, they made his son Josiah king in his place. And Josiah, good or bad? Very good. A very good king. He did a lot of very good stuff. They found the book of the law when he was there, and he was able to restore proper worship of God at his time. He didn't end so glorious. I think he ended up dying in battle. But here was one, you know, we have that bad, good, bad, good, bad, good thing. It's kind of like the cycle in Judges where, you know, they sin and they cry out to God, then he sends them a deliverer, and they're good for a couple of years, and then they go back to being bad, and then they cry out for a deliverer. And it just seems to repeat itself. And it's easy for us, and, you know, I'm big into history. Like I said, it's easy for us to like look back at the past and see these people as just names and just stories. I catch myself saying like story. My favorite story of the Bible, and you know, usually when you think of a story, you think of like Jack and the Beanstalk or something that's not, you know, real. But these are real people. A lot of these names and stuff are chronicled in secular history as well. We have other sources to back this up. These are real people, and these are real relationships between fathers and sons, as far as Manasseh and then Ammon being bad, and then back to Josiah being a great king, being a very good king. And I think that goes to show you that, you know, your influence is who we influence. I know we're not kings and queens of nations, but you know, we're part of God's kingdom, and you know, I think we have a responsibility to make sure that everyone knows, just like Manasseh knew, that the Lord was God. I think that's a responsibility that we all have, just being Christians, you know. And, you know, if you're not a Christian, you know, I would encourage you to read the Bible and to continue to study, and so that you too, you know, you can learn and know that the Lord is God. Because it's a great feeling. And I'm sure everyone here would disagree with you, agree with me when I say that. You know, it's a great feeling to have that confidence. I'm sure Manasseh felt a lot better about himself when he got back than before. And when he was, I'm sure he had all the confidence in the world to pray that prayer and then to see it answered. You know, we can have a prayer and maybe we not get the answer we want, but, you know, God ultimately knows best. And Manasseh, you know, he was able to be restored. And I think his story, you know, that's the story that we're not taught a lot, like I said. But I think it's a good story to think about. And maybe, you know, you can take this throughout the rest of spring break and to think about it. And, you know, and if someone asks you about a king or something, now you know a little bit of trivia. So you can impress your friends, because I know you all really want to. Because not everybody knows about these stories. And I just think I call them stories again, but I think these are great, great life lessons. And we can learn a lot from, you know, not just King David or King Solomon or Saul. You know, there was a lot of other kings and judges and stuff in the Old Testament. And I love talking about them and reading about them. And I could talk, when me and Jimmy get together, that's what we talk about. I don't know, it sounds really boring. But I promise you, you know, I encourage all of y'all to read these stories. You can learn a lot about it. I think we're going to go ahead and end it. And I appreciate y'all's attention tonight. Let you out a little bit early. The bell should be ringing soon, but I appreciate it.